Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. But most importantly, you can follow Paul Breddle at Paul_Breddle. And he is joining us today because I was super lazy and did not attend Packers practice on Wednesday. And Paul did. I went out to Noah's Ark with my kids and went to a water park and had a ton of fun. And just a word to the wise to anyone that's out there. This is not an ad. This is just a PSA. After you're done getting sunscreen on your kids, also make sure you do it to yourself, because otherwise you get this beautiful shade of red. I'm not embarrassed right now. That is just what my face is going to look like for the next handful of days. But I digress. Paul Breddle, it is amazing to have you back on the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Andy, I hope you enjoyed your day, and I appreciate you having me. Always happy to talk Packers with you.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. I know it was a little bit of a nondescript practice. I picked the right practice to not go to, thankfully for me on my end, but we still have a lot to get to. I want to start off right away with some transaction. I guess the one sort of transaction that took place. It's sort of an interesting one because it's the international pathway program that's being used here. You had Kenneth Odemegwu, who was released, which I actually think was probably a little bit difficult to do based on what we've always heard about his sort of energy and positivity and what he kind of brought to the locker room. I'm sure that probably wasn't an easy release from the personal side of things. We can get into the football side in just a moment, but I thought it was interesting what they did do is move Alex Hale, the kicker, into that international pathway program spot and allow for, I think, him probably to probably get waived at some point, go through waivers, get back on the practice squad as that 17th guy on the international pathway program, and allow for probably a real true developmental kicker potentially on the practice squad in season. An interesting move from Green Bay. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, that was kind of my first thought about it, was the difficulty of it in cutting Kenneth, because that defensive end group, you talked to Preston Smith, Enig Bari, Rashawn Gary, and you asked them about Kenneth, and all of them, their faces light up. I mean, he came into Green Bay last year with really no football experience whatsoever, and so they've seen this growth from him. They've obviously gotten to know him as a person, seeing him starting to make plays on the football field. So like you said, once that news came through, one, I was very surprised. And then I started thinking about that element of it. And, it's an unfortunate part of the business. And also, just to be transparent, I was caught off guard because I didn't realize, obviously, I know Alex Hale's from Australia, but he had played 4 years of college football. So I guess I didn't realize that he was still eligible for that program, and goes to show the Packers, as we've seen throughout training camp, not comfortable with the short-term or long-term option at kicker. So just trying to get any sort of additional advantage, so to speak, if that's the right word, from a developmental perspective, to have that in their corner. And they'll be able to have Alex Hale on the practice squad as a 17th guy, just like they did Odemegwu last season, have a full year to develop him and I guess see what comes from it. And just a quick side note on Hale, because we had the chance to talk to him a couple weeks ago. Like I said, he's from Australia. He played soccer growing up. He was on, I think, one of the youth national teams over there. He was a wake skater, I think, if I'm getting that correct. It's like wakeboarding and doing skateboarding tricks. And I think he even competed at that is at a super high, like even national level. Came over to the United States after his first year, or a year after graduating high school. And he said, I just wanted to play a sport. So he had the soccer background. So he walked on at Oklahoma State. And the very first football practice that they had, that was the first time he'd ever put pads on. It was the first time he ever put a helmet. The first field goal kick attempt that he had in a game was the first time he ever attempted a kick in a live game. So just a tremendous story in that regard of just kind of his journey and how he got to this point. But again, the Packers see something in him. They see something where they're willing to take a swing and see what they can you know, because again, he's a ball of clay at this point. He's got 4 or 5 years of kicking experience in his life up to this point. So they're gonna see what they can mold out of that.
Yeah, I want to start with Odemegwu just really quick, and obviously we don't need to spend a ton of time on this, but from an Odemegwu standpoint, he had that really nice day in minicamp where I think I saw 2 sacks. I know there were a couple other people who reported 3 sacks on that particular day, but you saw him maybe start to put some stuff together, and then in camp, it's been insanely quiet. He's barely gotten into the preseason games. I think 7-8 snaps here or there. Not to say that necessarily the writing was on the wall, but the writing was on the wall that like this was still a player that was not ready to really make any sort of noise in a like could he actually make a roster sort of way, which is still not necessarily expected at this point, but you could at least see that side of it. And then I think from an Alex Hale standpoint, I really love this way of utilizing the international pathway program, because if you're taking some of these players that are likely going to be a bit more raw, we have seen the success stories for some of these kickers and punters who have come internationally, who have come from rugby or soccer backgrounds, who have this, you know, massive leg and have to be extremely accurate with kicking as well, whether it be, you know, in rugby or in soccer, and come over and actually have a true pathway, no pun intended, into the NFL. And I think the other thing too is we have seen sometimes where a kicker during the course of a season will have like a late injury in the week, or he'll have an illness and there's some questions. They've had to sign a kicker on a couple of different occasions and bring somebody in at the very last minute and bring up an extra kicker to the roster because I think it was either illness or a late injury or just some concern over a hamstring or whatever it may be. And now they just kind of have that guy on the roster no matter what. And in case something does happen, you can just make that easy call up and say, hey, we'll bring him up to the roster and we don't have to go scrambling for a kicker that hasn't been working with the long snapper and the punter or anything like that. So I actually really like this way of utilizing the international pathway program. I want your thoughts on that. And then also, this does open a potential roster spot for this final preseason game. I'm wondering if it might be another running back, you know, with Josh Jacobs likely not playing. Dylan's got the stinger. And then you've got Marshawn Lloyd not playing. You end up with what? Merriweather, McCrary, and Emmanuel Wilson. And maybe 3 is enough, especially with Henry Pearson being like an emergency guy. But I wonder if we might see another running back.
Yeah, that was my first thought as well, for the reasons you mentioned. Matt LaFleur on Tuesday, I think it was, didn't sound like Marshawn Lloyd was going to be ready at all this week. AJ Dillon still kind of navigating what the extent of the injury is, and then kind of what the next steps are going to be in that regard. So yeah, running back was the first position that came to mind for me. And then with Alex Hale, again, just that developmental perspective of it. This isn't, regardless of whether it's Carlson, Joseph, whether they bring in someone else off waivers to be their kicker this season, this isn't for 2024. This is let's get to 2025. Let's see what sort of progress is made. Let's see if he can compete with Carlson or whoever is here next summer to potentially be the kicker at that point. But again, this is a year, maybe even 2 years down the road, because again, he's, relatively speaking, has very, very little experience. I think at Oklahoma State, he had 54 career attempts. Again, no background otherwise. Like, that is the extent of his in-game action right now. So this is a long play from the Packers' perspective, and taking advantage of the opportunity that they have with him.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. I know the biggest takeaway probably from all of practice was just some of the injury updates. So I will let you go through those and not steal any of the one piece of thunder that actually happened at practice. So updates on injuries today, Paul.
Yeah, so back was Keyshawn Banks. He had been dealing, I believe, with a hamstring, if I'm correct. And he had been out for a few weeks. Raylan Goforth, linebacker, he left the preseason game with a concussion. And then Preston Smith, he missed Tuesday's practice with an illness. So all of them were back. A.J. Dillon, Marshawn Lloyd, Spencer Wagey, Andre Dillard, and Tyler Davis were all still out. The only real updates, and I know Rob Domofsky tweeted out on Tuesday that Dillard's shoulder injury that he's navigating right now isn't long term. So I guess right now, and again, we haven't gotten specifics from LaFleur or anything. To me, it feels kind of like, all right, we'll see. Is he out there Thursday? Is he out there Saturday? It feels kind of day to day to me. Big takeaway from practice injury wise was AJ Dillon. And before practice, LaFleur was asked about the stinger that he's dealing with right now and alluded to that they're still looking into it. They're trying to get options and opinions about what he's really dealing with. And then we talked to AJ Dillon in the locker room after practice, and he confirmed that they're in kind of wait and see mode right now. And if we think or recall from last season, he missed time with a neck injury for during that latter portion of the season. And, you know, Dillon said each stinger that a player has can be completely different one from the other. So he didn't say it was, you know, identical to what he went through last season, but it did sound like there's some similarities with it. So they're in the process right now of getting second opinions. And then once they kind of, you know, feel confident about it, here's what the injury is, then they'll kind of put the next steps in place about how they're going to navigate it. So again, just trying to read between the lines here. Doesn't sound like we're going to see him, you know, at all the rest of this week is my guess at this time, and long term or the next couple of weeks, I think that's still up in the air at this time, kind of what that timeline is going to look like.
Let's assume for a minute that Andre Dillard will be good to go by regular season so that his cut down status isn't affected by his injury. We'll just assume that for the sake of this argument. I don't think Spencer Wagey was probably in the conversation for any 53-man roster spot, but Dillon, Lloyd, and Tyler Davis, all very much so in that, you know, in the likely, you know, 50, obviously Lloyd would have 1,000,000% made the 53 and will be on the roster either on IR or, you know, to begin the season or on the 53. He's not going anywhere. Dillon and Davis more, I think, in that likely, maybe not locked, but likely sort of status. How do these injuries potentially affect the 53 in your opinion? If Dillon, Lloyd, Tyler Davis do have injuries that could potentially go into the season, and how could that change maybe the makeup of the 53? What is up, everybody? We are back with another exciting week of Prize Picks action. And if you have not started playing Prize Picks yet, what are you waiting for? You need to sign up right now and you will quickly realize why it's America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Now that Team USA has brought home the gold, WNBA basketball is ready to heat back up, and it's already been a huge weekend from Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. And right now, you could turn $10 into $1,000 while watching the stars tear it up in the WNBA. And did you know that you can set your lineup in as little as 60 seconds? Just pick more or pick less on a player's stat projections, and you are locked in. Prize Picks is available in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and of course, Wisconsin. This week, I'm going with Kelsey Plum and Arike Ngumbawale in what should be a massively fun week of basketball on Prize Picks. And the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hello, friends. As many of you know, a few years back, the Milwaukee Bucks were in the NBA Finals, and I desperately wanted to go to Game 6 in Milwaukee to see them win the championship. As you can imagine, prices were insane, and I kept going back and forth with different apps to try and find the cheapest tickets possible. I finally found them, clicked purchase, and of course, they were gone. Goodbye, Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Now, thankfully, the day of the game, I was able to find a ticket, but the entire thing was so expensive and way too stressful. I really wish I could have simply used Game Time to alleviate all of the stress and all of the hassle. I've started using Game Time app for purchasing all of my tickets, and I wish I would have done so sooner. From low prices to easy to find tickets to last minute ticket deals, the Game Time app is perfect for all of my ticket needs. Game Time is the fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. You can get images of your seat before you buy, you can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two clicks only in fact, and tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never need to dig through your email. The Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. That's code PACKADAY. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, just purely speculating right now, you know, because we know hamstring injuries are all completely different and how long it takes to recover. But, you know, like we just talked about, Keyshawn Banks returned from that after a couple of weeks. Carrington Valentine is getting back in the mix after a couple of weeks. You know, if we use, again, and not everything's the same, want to be clear about that. But if we use kind of those timelines and what we've seen so far, we're still a couple weeks away from the regular season, you know, they might not have to use that IR designation on Marshawn Lloyd, you know, whether he's ready to go week one or not. Again, we don't have any sort of reports right now, but I don't know that he would need the full 4 weeks off into the season beyond where we are right now, beyond the time that he's already missed to get back from that. And again, that remains to be seen. So if that's the case, it potentially works out smoothly in having the two designations of the players that you mentioned, Dylan and Davis, being able to put them on there again, if their injuries are to that extent. You know, if it doesn't work out that way and there are these three guys for two spots, you know, I think then you start looking at, all right, who's most likely to, if we have to release them, that we could get back. And, you know, from that regard, you know, obviously it comes down to Davis or Dylan in that aspect of it. So that's kind of how I see things playing out right now in that way.
And then I would add on top of that, I think, you know, the potential beneficiaries here, obviously Emmanuel Wilson is probably one of the big ones where if Dylan and Lloyd are not able to go, not only does he make a 53, you're potentially looking at Emmanuel Wilson as running back two going into that Eagles game. Again, if you want to run into a situation where Dylan and Lloyd are unavailable for that first week, which would be quite the change in fortunes for him going into the season and would be a potential huge spot for him, because I'm sure you're not going to want to, you know, run Jacobs 28 carries or something and crazy in his very first week as a Green Bay Packer down in Brazil. So that would be a very interesting development for Emmanuel Wilson. And then I think the other interesting one here, I don't know. I don't like, my mind can't even, you know, fully grasp this, Paul, but like we have watched, you know, Josiah DeGuara obviously have a role last year as sort of this H-back role. And it does sort of feel like Tyler Davis has kind of taken that role a little bit when he's been in camp and when he's been healthy. And I do wonder, like, is that an important role for this team? And do they feel like maybe Sims and, you know, Kraft and Musgrave, like that's not exactly their cup of tea? And just it's just like, this is where my mind just starts getting weird of like, is it so important that like Henry Pearson could actually make, and I don't think he can make the 53, like, but is he a practice squad guy that they call up that first week until somebody like Tyler Davis comes back? Like, it is like, that is the really weird thing here, is because I do think they really like that H-back position. And I think Sims can probably play it a little bit, but it does get a lot more unique in that sort of instance if Davis is out for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I looked up these numbers a while back, but even last year, towards the end, when you had both Musgrave and Tucker Kraft healthy, obviously you had Ben Sims in the mix. I mean, Josiah DeGuara was still getting not a huge amount. I think it was like 12, 13, 14 snaps a game. Still. Again, yeah, not nothing whatsoever. Yeah. So that is a role within this offense. And I know Tyler Davis's last game, the preseason game that everyone saw, certainly wasn't his best performance, but, and let me know if you feel differently, but from practice, I thought he's been, throughout training game, he's been much more steady than Ben Sims. I think he's been very solid overall. And for someone who has to move around the formation, someone who you just need to be a sound blocker, someone who has to be a reliable pass catcher if they just got to get the ball dumped off to him, I mean, that's Tyler Davis. And so I definitely think that there's a role for him. And again, if that injury lingers into the season, yeah, Henry Pearson is really the next guy on the team who fits that very specific mold that they're looking for. And again, 12, 13, 14 snaps. That's certainly not nothing. That is a role. That is a role in the NFL that you're going to have each week. You play an important part in the offensive game plan each week. So that's, yeah, it's a great point. That's something they'll have to navigate if they get there.
And of course, Tyler Davis, 2 years ago, more special team snaps than anyone else on the roster. And we know how much Bisaccia values him as a special teams guy as well. It's funny you brought up the, you know, feel free to disagree with you, you know, if I want, about the Tyler Davis situation. I just joked the other day of like, here I've been talking up Tyler Davis about like how he's been super consistent in training camp. And then I'm like, Tyler just goes out and makes me look like a liar. And, you know, because he says struggles in that very first game back or whatever, but no, those are always the difficult things, because I think even going back to last year, pre-injury, I thought he had a really nice training camp in 2023. And I thought he's been off to a really nice start in 2024 up until he got in his first game back. And I'm willing to chalk some of that up to rust, and I'm willing to chalk some of that up to, again, just his first game back, maybe some, you know, anxiety, some nervousness, whatever it might be. Not that that's a total excuse, but it definitely was not the Tyler Davis that we've seen in training camp so far.
No, it wasn't whatsoever. And there was one play, and honestly, I might have mentioned it last time I was on here, where it was play action and just, you know, him staying in to chip, sell the fake that he's a blocker, and then just sneak out over the middle. Quarterback dumps it off to him. Just from start to finish, just a super, super crisp play. Not a highlight play, maybe picked up 6-7 yards, but that's what you need in those situations.
He did his job in multiple ways on that particular play, and that's what we've seen from him all camp long. That's going to be another interesting one. I know practice in and of itself, a little bit of a snooze fest, but any takeaways that you had from this practice that is worth noting in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, honestly, the big thing was special teams. They spent a large portion of practice going through that, and we got to see multiple runs through with the first, second kickoff units, the first, second punt return, punt coverage units. And so I was jotting down as quickly as I could who was lined up where. And when it comes to roster bubble guys, there was four of them that stood out as they're getting a lot of run on these starting or second units of special teams. And it's nobody that's going to catch us by surprise. It's Christian Welch, Zane Anderson, Robert Rochelle, and Corey Ballantyne. But as we have these roster conversations and with roster cuts looming and we're at crunch time, like there certainly isn't room for all those guys. Like, honestly, I was trying to kind of go through a rough prediction before this, just to kind of see where things fell on my initial thoughts on it. Like, there might be room for just one of them. Like, yeah, it is, you know, we've talked about in the past, those back end of the roster spots being for special teams guys. But when you have as many draft picks as the Packers have had, you are going to start to need those first, second year guys to come in. The Tyron Hoppers, the Edrin Coopers, like Kalen King, if he makes the team, like you need those guys to come in and contribute on special teams. And Matt LaFleur talked about that today. If you're a back end guy at cornerback, linebacker, safety, tight end, you have to contribute in that capacity. And you start to use in your roster construction, you're weighing, all right, the upside of Kalen King as a cornerback 2-3 years from now versus the immediate help that Robert Rochelle will provide you on special teams. And Robert Rochelle right now is probably better than Kalen King on special teams. And for a team in a, you know, championship window, obviously we know what their expectations are. Like, that's a difficult decision to weigh.
It's so funny that you say that, and I'm beaming over here because I literally just had the same exact conversation the other day of like, and it's not only just like a Rochelle versus King debate, because as you mentioned, you get to all of these fringe roster guys and it's like, it feels like you can leave Christian Welch off. You can leave Robert Rochelle off. You know, Corey Ballantyne, maybe you could leave off. You could leave off Zane Anderson. You could leave off Benny Sapp. And it's just like, yeah, you could, but those are literally all core special teamers on this team. And it's like, can you leave all of them off? Can you leave all but one of them off? Tyler Davis, another core special teamer. It's just like, there are a lot of these fringe guys that are, you know, very much important and integral to this special teams, for better or worse sometimes, but that's going to be some interesting stuff. And I think the, you know, sort of the Ted Thompson way of doing it was sort of screw special teams. We're going to take the developmental guys and redshirt as many guys as we need to so that those guys can become players down the road. And it hasn't exactly, and I think it kind of started that way a little bit for Goody. And I think over the last couple of years, especially since Bisaccia came over, they've had those last handful of spots. I mean, there's a guy like Dalen Levitt that's basically on the team as just a special teams guy. It's basically granting Rich Bisaccia a fourth special teams guy in the roster outside of kicker, punter, long snapper, and then a teams guy, and that was Dalen Levitt. Are they going to give Rich Bisaccia another teams guy? And if they do, does he get to, you know, who does he choose? Does he choose a Zane Anderson? Does he choose a Christian Welch? Like, that to me is very intriguing as well. So those are all going to be super interesting discussion points. And I think your point of a lot of those guys being on first team special teams is not a insignificant point whatsoever.
Yeah. And we talk about the jump from college to the NFL on offense, on defense. It's there for special teams too, especially for a lot of the earlier round picks where special teams, maybe especially towards the end of their careers, probably wasn't something that they were asked to do a lot in college. So now it's getting them, I asked LaFleur about that. It's about getting them reacclimated to the technique, the responsibilities, the roles. Then, of course, there's the adjustment to just the new scheme, the speed, the strength of going up against NFL competition. And I keep going back to that linebacker position because it's Tyron Hopper, it's Edrin Cooper, and both played a fair amount of special teams in college. Not like they're coming to the NFL with no experience, but those are rookies. Those are rookies that are going to have to play key special team snaps this season. And they're rookies that have both missed time this summer with injuries. And that just, again, further further adds to, you know, what Brian Gutekunst is going to have to work through. And there's Zane Anderson at safety. It's just, it's a, you know, it's perplexing right now, honestly, from the outside looking in and trying to put these roster predictions together, because again, you're weighing the now, the instant impact versus, you know, a potential starter contributor on offense or defense a few years from now.
The flip side potentially, and again, if some of these guys especially get healthy, is it's not always that the special teams gets guys talented like Evan Williams, Javon Bullard, Edgerrin Cooper, Tyron Hopper, and some of those type of players who could theoretically be on teams. Like, they have the potential to be big time players on teams if they can go out and learn it quickly enough. And that is maybe one of the benefits here. If you are getting some stud athletes on that special teams group, if in fact that ends up coming to fruition, and that'll be a sort of an interesting thing to keep an eye on as well. All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if I could add one other comment on that. You have Rich Bisaccia as your special teams coordinator, and I don't know if he's still the highest paid special teams coordinator, but I believe when he came to Green Bay, he was. So that could be one of those instances too, where it's, these are your guys this year, you know, this is your bread and butter. This is what you do. It's how you've made your name in the NFL. Turn them into good contributors for you. Cause like you said, you have those key athletic attributes to work with. And then it's just the refinement of the technique and all those other aspects of it. So you wonder kind of that balance with it as well.
I just want to say, this is why I absolutely love this show. And anyone that is listening to this, we've nerded out for 20 minutes about the international pathway program, special teams, back of the roster battles. I think we brought up Ellis Merriweather, Nate McCrary. Like, this is exactly what I want this to be as much as possible. In the weeds. This is amazing. So I love every second of this. Let's talk a little bit though about sort of those final 53-man roster spots. And what I kind of want to do is just like, I'll let you go in any direction that you want for this. Maybe just a couple guys that you feel, whether strongly or like just you have a question about it or whatever it might be, of like, it could be somebody that you think is, you know, maybe an unknown that you think has got actually a really good shot to make the roster, or somebody that is maybe talked about as a roster guy that you're like, I don't see it. I'll let you go in any direction you want with as many people as you want.
So I'm going to go to offensive tackle to start here. And I have not been on the Andre Dillard's going to make the team. I've thought he's going to be he was the veteran that they brought in before the draft. It's to provide them with some stability, but I've changed my ways. If I'm making a roster prediction today, I have him on it. And, you know, he's been pretty steady, especially in pass protection in the preseason games. But obviously with the insight that we get from being at practice, that's where a lot of I'm gleaning this from. You know, it just feels like, and how he's being rotated in, you know, not so much anymore, but when Tom was being rotated in and out during the team portion, it was Andre Dillard who was in. You know, you're seeing Kadeem Telfort and Travis Glover and Caleb Jones more so with the second, third team offense. So I think Andre Dillard's going to be on this team. And also, I think right now, if I was putting the prediction together again, just based off of how we're seeing these reps and rotations in practice, I think Kadeem Telfort is going to be on there over Travis Glover. And I know Travis Glover is the draft pick, but to me, that goes out the window a little bit when you're comparing him to Telfort, because it's a 2023 undrafted rookie versus a six-round pick in 2024. So it's not a veteran where, again, back end of the roster, you're like, well, let's take the higher upside guy,
right,
versus the veteran. It's not the UDFA versus the third-round pick. It's a six-round pick this year versus a UDFA last year. And, you know, Glover, he just started working into the second-team offense last week. You know, he's been with the threes basically all of training camp. It looks like he's jumped Caleb Jones, but if I was building out that pecking order right now, I would have a Dillard, Telfort. For the longest time, I had Jones and then Glover. I think Glover's jumped him now,
yep,
just based on the rotation that we've seen. But, you know, that was he took his lumps in that preseason game, not to say that Telfort didn't either. But just, again, looking at how they're rotated in practice, the left versus right versatility, we're seeing that from Telfort, whereas Glover's still only on the right side. For what it's worth, I know Glover played some interior during his time in college, but they were given Telfort interior snaps during OTAs and mini camp. So just, again, trying to read the tea leaves and how we're seeing things unfold in practice. If I think it's going to be Dillard and Telfort at the tackle positions right now.
Do you have only 9 guys on your offensive line, or is there an extra interior offensive lineman as your 10th?
I just had 9. It was Ryan Monk and then those 2 tackles as the backups.
Yeah. See, I think, and I haven't put one together this week. I'll do one obviously Monday or maybe even Sunday next week. Or this coming week, I should say. But I think I would put 10, and I think I would keep Glover as the 10th in that situation. And again, that you're robbing from somewhere else. And I'll kind of talk about Glover a little bit more in one of my other ones in just a second. But I think in order to keep Glover, I do kind of agree. I think you might need to keep 10 because I do think, and I kind of don't think like Dillard, and I talked about this a little bit the other day, I'm not sure Dillard is the swing tackle. I think Dillard is the backup left tackle, and I think Kadeem Telford might be the backup right tackle. And it might even be that you put a Morgan or a Jenkins out at one of those spots before you even get to that. But it does seem like Dillard is comfortable on the left side and very uncomfortable on the right. And it does feel like guys like Glover and Telford are a little bit more comfortable on the right side than they are on the left. And I think you could end up of like, hey, we don't really have a true traditional swing tackle, but we're going to probably do something where Dillard maybe plays left and one of the other guys plays right. And I think you can probably get by with that with what they need it to be for this upcoming season.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
All right, what else you got for me? Shoot me with one more, two more, whatever you got.
Corey Ballantyne. I think he's going to be on this roster. And I guess I don't know. Maybe I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but I know Kalen King has certainly shown the physicality at the slot cornerback position. We've seen him make some splash plays, two interceptions. I think he has a quote unquote sack as well. But Ballantyne, man, he's just steady. And I go back to LaFleur, I think at the start of training camp, talking about how good he feels about the depth of the cornerback unit. And obviously, you got Eric Stokes, Jair Alexander at the top. But I think having a guy like Ballantyne on the back end is a big part of that. Special teams contributor, we know that. Came in last season, relied upon heavily to play. I think he had over 400 snaps last season playing on the boundary. Played really, really well that week 17 against Minnesota. I think targeted 9 times, allowed 3 receptions. And we're seeing him get some opportunities during individual time out of the nickel. So I think that's just more of a cross training, you know, giving him a little bit more versatility in his tool belt. But you get that stability on the outside if you really have to rely upon him. And again, as we watch these rotations in practice, when the second defense is out there, it's him and Rochelle on the boundary. It's Kalen King at the nickel. And occasionally, if Jair Alexander, Eric Stokes, you know, needs a breather with the ones, who's the first guy in? It's Corey Ballantyne. I think he just defense, special teams, provides stability that I'm just not sure that Kalen King at this point in his career can.
Do you see it coming down to Kalen King versus Corey Ballantyne, or do you see it coming down to Kalen King versus Robert Rochelle?
I think King versus Rochelle.
Yeah.
And, and in that instance, you have Ballantyne as your fifth cornerback who, like I said, can play special teams. Like there you're going with, all right, let's take the guy with the young player with the defensive upside, in my opinion, over Rochelle.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I do. It wouldn't like entirely shock me if we got to the end of or cut downs and it was Rochelle and King that were on the roster. It wouldn't be like, oh my God, I can't believe they did it. But I would definitely be more surprised. So I don't necessarily think it's like a hot take or anything, but I definitely think there's at least some, you know, competition there. And I do mostly because I think Rochelle and King have had very good training camps. I don't think it's been anything that Ballantyne has done wrong. It's more that just the other two guys have stepped up and played well, which is why I think it's a little bit more of a discussion. But I think when you go for a player who started a lot of games last year in some big high leverage situations, has again that starting experience, can play outside. They've now cross trained him inside and can play as a core special teamer. That's a lot of things to add on your resume. And I don't know. And they gave him a pretty sizable signing bonus as well. You add up all of it. And I'd be pretty surprised if he ends up ultimately getting released.
Okay. Sure. I don't have another player, but quote, I wrote about Christian Welch last week, and this quote from Gutekunst at the combine has just stuck with me. And as you know, I've been putting together these rough roster predictions. I do not have them keeping 6 linebackers. I cannot make that math work out. But at the combine, Gutekunst said between, you know, as they switch over to this 4-3 defense, he said schematically and what we're asking the guys to do, we don't see being a huge transition. But where he mentioned there being a change is in the number of linebackers that they keep between the 53 and between the practice squad. And so as 5 being kind of a normal number at that position, whether it's the practice squad and going heavy linebacker there, finding a way to keep 6 again, I can't do it in terms of keeping 6 linebackers just because of how much that takes away from another position group. But I just wanted to share that because as we're doing these roster predictions and as we're, you know, that comes out and it's like, all right, what's the practice squad going to look like? you know, Gutekunst, he tells us, you know, we don't always catch it, but he gives us, you know, he tells us kind of what the rough idea, thought process, plan is. And so that's something from the combine that has stuck with me.
I love that. I have two, and I want to know your thoughts on both of them. And then we'll get out of here. My first, and this is just, again, sort of how my weird brain thinks. I think if the Packers only had Malik Heath or only had Grant Dubose, I think you probably fight to keep one of them. And I think there's still a minimum, a coin flip chance that they keep a sixth wide receiver and keep one of them anyway. But part of me does wonder, at the end of last year, once Melton stepped up, they had Heath on the 53, but he was inactive in the playoff games. I think the last week of the season, he was inactive towards the end of the year, and they didn't really need that sixth wide receiver. And part of me just wonders if they're like, you know what? We have two of these guys. The odds that both of them get claimed are exponentially slim. Like, we're going to get one of them back on the practice squad. We're probably going to get both of them back on the practice squad. Do we really need to stress out about keeping one of them on the 53? And you're probably going to end up with injuries at some point somewhere where you can add one of them to the 53 at some point and then figure that out later. And in the meantime, if you need the extra guy, you can use your, however, is it two or three? I forget how many call-ups that you can get. You can use them on, how much is it?
Three per player.
Yeah, three per player. So you can use your three on Heath. You can use your three on Dubose. That gets you 6 weeks of call-ups right there. Like, I just kind of wonder if the presence of both of them makes almost both of them expendable, because you figure you're just not going to lose both of them. So that's just, again, how my weird brain works. I would not be surprised if Heath made it. I would not be surprised if Dubose made it. I'd be mostly surprised if both of them made it. But that's, again, I am wondering if just the presence of each other just makes it feel like we're going to get at least one of them back on the practice squad and you kind of feeling okay with it. And then the other one that I have is, the more and more that I think about this, I think every 2024 draft pick ends up on the roster. I just think that, you know, once you get to the bottom of this list and you start stacking those final few spots, I talked about this a little bit the other day. I don't know how many of these guys, and I know the special teams is going to play a part, but I don't know how many of these guys I'm like losing sleep over. If somebody claims Christian Welch, a Zane Anderson, Corey Ballantyne, or Robert Rochelle, a Brenton Cox, a Aaron Mosby, one of the backup guards. Like, I just don't know. Grant Dubose, Malik Heath. I just don't know that I'm going to be like, oh my God, I cannot believe that they lost those guys. And now what are they going to do? And they'll be like, they can easily find somebody that does almost the exact same things as any of those other guys do. And I more like seen some of the positives from some of these draft picks already. And we know they're not all going to turn out, but I feel like Pratt and Glover, and we heard how excited Coach was about Oladapo this week. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like the back of the roster guys here, Kalen King has already made a significant amount of plays. In fact, like, he's made as many, if not more, plays in the secondary than I think just about anyone back there. There's too much upside for those guys. And those would be the ones where I'd be a little bit more of like, did they let him go too early? And is some other team going to find a gem? And when you do find somebody like a Kalen King and a Michael Pratt in the seventh round, I don't know that you want to necessarily give up on them this early and be like, we kind of found this hidden gem, and can we sneak them on the practice squad? Maybe we can't, but I honestly think they're going to see the upside with all of those guys just based on the little snippets that we've seen from a lot of them. And I think all of the 2024 draft picks end up on the roster.
I agree with that. And that's, for the most part, that's Gutekunst's history too. I think Lou Nichols last year, but he was dealing with an injury, and honestly, Dubose. Before that, Dubose. Yep. Again, injury related, coming back, just not a long enough runway for him. But you go beyond kind of those circumstances, you know, maybe Cole Van Lannen, and I could be wrong, started off on the practice squad. But other than that, like, if you're a Packers draft pick in your rookie year, you know, that's part of the advantage in terms of making the team. And when it comes to the quarterback position, the two versus three, you know, Brian Kudukin said, I want to get back to drafting and developing quarterbacks. You don't develop a fifth, sixth round pick, what Clifford was, in one season. Like, we've seen it with the starting quarterbacks. Like, this is a long haul, you know, endeavor that they're going through. So in my opinion, it's going to be three quarterbacks on the roster, because that's what drafting and developing is. It's not giving up on, you know, maybe Pratt's the backup, but it's not giving up on your fifth round pick a year in because he's throwing interceptions in training camp. Like, that's what you're going to go through as part of that thought process. So I absolutely agree with that. And one other name I just want to throw out there because this is interesting to me.
Yep.
Again, if I'm putting the roster together now, I got Brenton Cox on it. Super yep. talented, tremendous potential, premier position, but really deep defensive end room. Not necessarily a special teams contributor. That yep. playoff game last season against the 49ers, he was inactive, I think, and they elevated Keyshawn Banks to take Enagbari's special team snaps because he wasn't playing. Yep. So again, we've seen the last few years, Caleb Jones, Luke Tenuta, like that's, you know, they will roster those guys to develop them. But I just, you know, and again, I have him on my roster if I'm making that prediction now, but in terms of his playing time, in terms of when he's going to see the field, because he's at such a loaded position group, you do have to wonder where those snaps are going to come from with him.
Yeah, no, that's a really tough one as well, because I do like some of his potential, but you bring up, again, the fact that no special teams value, and you can go into the game with four defensive ends knowing that Gary Enagbari, LVN, and Preston are going to take all of the snaps anyway, and even if you have somebody down, you know, you have Carl Brooks who can kick out, Colby Wooden who can kick out. So there's a variety of different options that you have there. Just going back, cause you brought him up, Cole Van Landen, by the way, PFF's offensive player of the week for preseason week two in the NFL. So that's why you don't give up on those draft picks early, Paul, because you never know if they're going to be a preseason week two player of the week a few years after the fact. So you just always got to keep them around just in case.
I always learn something with you.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm glad that again, this is the weeds that we get into. We're now into Cole Van Landen talk. So Paul, before we get any further in the weeds, thank you so much for joining. Where can we find all of your incredible work?
Yeah, I appreciate it as always, Andy. Follow me on Twitter at @Paul_Brettel. Head over to ESPNLacrosse.com for all my articles. Download the 105.5 ESPN Lacrosse app for all your Wisconsin sports talk, not just Packers, but Brewers, Bucks, Badgers, anything you need.
A huge thank you again to Paul Brettel for joining today and getting us all up to date with everything that happened at Packers practice. Paul does incredible work. Again, you can find him on Twitter at @Paul_Brettel. Of course, you can find his work over at Packers Wire and at ESPN Lacrosse. It is absolute must-read stuff, so make sure you're checking it out as often as you can. Of course, shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shave Rod Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, Caleb Cookster, SoCal Pack, Dan Gesford, and Love and Football. That's going to do it for us today, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.